I have a good intro for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm all ears.
It's what God said to me the other day.
What did God say to you the other day?
I put a spell on you.
Ooh, I like it.
There you go.
Thank you. That was a fine piece of blues right there. Well,
the first
thing to do is Yes.
Yes.
The first thing to do is create an imaginary context, which justifies our being here. After that, it's kind of smooth sailing.
Let's talk about the Enlightenment eye fuck. What is that?
I don't know. Sounds nice. If somebody's selling it, I want some.
I feel like that's what that dude was doing the other night.
Oh, yeah.
Enlightenment eye fuck.
Yeah.
It works.
Oh, sure.
Is that a new Apple product?
Yeah. That's a good name. You basically stare at someone googly-eyed, all bright-eyed.
And make them feel uncomfortable to the point of submission.
Until they either cry or laugh. It works.
Yeah, it
does. I'm like, I'm going to try that, you know? Maybe I can get things.
Yeah. Well, there's got to be an end game of some kind. Otherwise, why might we be drawn to consider it?
To consider what?
the context for this kind of conversation.
Oh.
Yeah. Right.
An end game?
There has to be an end game. Meaning there has to be a context, right? There has to be a reason to have a conversation which explores the nature of...
Right, like inviting you to not know?
Yeah. Something.
Something.
There's gotta be... Yeah, there's gotta be something at least to justify why we might hang out. And of course that can shift, right? It doesn't have to be the same justification every time you hang out. Otherwise it becomes a cult. But somewhere underneath it all, whatever it all suggests, is some kind of a quest. A motivation to find something out, to ameliorate discordant experience, to put my life and my imagination and so-called reality in a workable perspective, to optimize joy. So depending on who you're talking with, you're going to find talking points, right? Sound bites. That creates some kind of context for having an experience or an exploration appear in your life. What does one want if we go to Machu Picchu with Susan Duvall, or photograph orbs with Gene Ong, or fall open with Adam Chaxfield? Right. I mean, why were some people at an event on Sunday, which was fairly accessible, and so many others that,
not accessible,
that feign, you know, interest in spirituality or awakening or peace of mind, would have nothing, you know, to do with it. I would think, oh, hey, we're all into peace of mind and, enlightenment or awakening or whatever you want to call it. You'd expect the room to be full, all in, like, hey, what's on your mind? Let's do this. But it's just so curious to see where people go for, nourishment, what it is they think they're after, and how they want it to be fulfilled. And even that is, you can't wrap your hands around it.
No.
I listened to a lovely woman that Nan brought to my attention named Maggie, and she's a former Byron Katie student. And you could swear by listening to her on this conference call that she does once a month that she was like a Byron Katie clone. I mean, the language about thinking and is it true, and the mind and thinking, is it true, and the mind, and even the intonation in her voice as she was presenting very famous taglines from Byron Katie's teachings sounded like she was, you know, it was like a monkey see, monkey do Byron Katie thing. Which is fine. I'm not putting that up or down. People could go participate in that and become, I don't know, interested in refuting or refusing the mind. And then you've just got another clever fetish on your hands, which is refusing and refuting thought. And again, you wonder, well, okay, that sounds like a cool strategy to attempt to ameliorate suffering, to ameliorate anxiety, delusion, fantasy. Is that what somebody wants? We're never quite sure what humans want, even when they tell you what it is that they want. You're like, I'm not so sure.
Well, that was really clear at that Adam thing. It was really funny. It was just all over the place, like, you know, him saying something and then somebody just turning it into something else completely, totally different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, well, some of these programs look like a form of therapy. Waking Down in Mutuality does that. Where some kind of gazing or transmission or generous dumbfoundedness becomes a real or imagined cathartic space.
Well, I mean, I felt the space and I enjoyed that. But yeah, then, you know, the girl next to me was like taking notes and she couldn't wait to sign up for the course. But it's like,
that's great. Yeah. That's great. I mean, I guess that's how Adam makes a living now.
Yeah. And who's to say, like, I mean, I guess that's, you know, if she maybe is going to take a course no matter what you do, and it's better she gets him than Byron Katie. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, who's to say, right? It's so strange. Yeah. If there is an unwinding, I mean, the Buddha referred to it as becoming or being unbound. Yeah. There was something so delicious about the notion of being or becoming or recognizing the unbound nature of present experience. And somewhere along the line, we have to be gifted or graced with the maturity, the simplicity, the ease of seeing if one can discover a relationship with unbound at present. Otherwise, you know, it's just a ping pong match with me and my ego. Yeah, because we don't really know what to say in presence as present unless we're telling a story about the way we think or feel about things.
Yeah, well, and I feel like, you know, I don't know, sometimes I'm like, I don't know if it's fear, just uncomfortableness, like, because it's so different, it's a different way to express yourself. I don't know.
We don't have a easeful vocabulary for hanging out without agenda and just seeing what wafts through your consciousness on a kind of an archetypal basis.
No. I always have an agenda or something. Even if it's like a real subtle, stupid agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Something like
a... Yeah. Well, this is a funny knot. The aspirant comes to the teacher and says, you know, this suffering is really bothering me. And, the suffering of ruminating about the suffering is really bothering me. And the suffering of having an attitude about the ruminating about the suffering of the suffering about the suffering that's really bothering me is really bothering me. And one is often flying in an elaborate multi-tiered fantasy of self and trying to wiggle free from self. And it's infuriating, if not depressing. So what's the amelioration? For as long as we think the amelioration of the pressure of self and the accompanying disappointment has something to do with circumstances or events or even the way that I feel about things, then I keep needing to reify or create self to assess how self is doing in hopes that self could be feeling better about things than self was feeling about them a minute ago.
A lot of self going on there.
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of self going on. And it turns out that at least in these kinds of teachings, you know, these left-hand path, Rigpa, Radiant Present, Dzogchen, Kashmiri, Shaivism, you know, Zen, Smackdown teaching, one does one's best to to elicit or solicit or conjure a discontinuity in the habit of self-concern. There's perhaps more freedom, whatever that may mean, when the engine of self-concern abates naturally, rather than trying to manage, micromanage, or improve the quality of self-concern. It's like bathing in intelligence could turn out to be more fun, more nourishing, even more utilitarian than the repetition of self-concern. It often sounds like flutes playing. and piccolos. And that's the context. It's, God, it's so simple, it's almost stupid. Oh, you mean if I were to be struck dumb with the cessation of self-concern, and I wouldn't have to negotiate with all of my imaginary problems. I wouldn't have to wiggle free of anything that I had, wasn't under the influence of to begin with. So, mind, were there such a thing, could enjoy its own refreshment as awareness, as curiosity, as interest, as shamanic or archetypal, you know, Jungian autopoiesis, spontaneity of expression, of feeling, you know, light. If we want to borrow from Paul Hederman's suggestion of traveling lighter. Then there's that anxiety that creeps in, which is, oh, it's kind of, maybe it's nice having, enjoying a certain experience together, but I want the strategy, or I want the fuse, and the dynamite, and the, you know, the match, so I can turn this on as I please in the rhythm of my daily life, where I might feel robotic and under the pressure of my own psyche and the clutter of the psyche of others. So we grasp again to presume that your present experience should have some utility for you in the future, whether by repetition or avoidance. And that subtle sense of self and self-reference launches again. Psychological time. A kind of grasping. And I think that's what drives humans nuts, is the movement of psychological time and the movement of grasping. The inability to, dare I say, the inability to orgasm spiritually, right? Not to sexualize it, because that's not intended. I mean, to orgasm spiritually is that this very present moment is without the banality and pressure of self-referencing.
I think that sums up my, like, that word, the word orgasm in a way is like the fear of that, like, just that expression of that. That word, I don't know, that word just made sense to me. It's like that orgasmic, like, it's just such a different way. It seems kind of awkward or uncomfortable or something to,
yeah,
for me to encounter someone and be like, oh, you know.
Like, yeah. Really, it's not politically correct to get together and say, well, let's have a group orgasm.
No.
Yeah.
Well,
because usually it's, you know, it's carnal, right?
Yeah, no, it's misinterpreted a lot. That, like, I mean, I can't, I mean, that's not a, yeah, good, I don't know. But yeah, it's, well, you still have a lot of Judeo-Christian, like, weird things going on too. And, you know, all this, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if we, let's say we hop a ride on consciousness, right? Which is a little different than insisting that everything is about me and the resolution of my imaginary discomforts and disquietudes. Instead, let's appreciate consciousness as just kind of a, you know, a train without tracks just breezing through town. And you can just hop on. And, of course, order a nice hot chocolate from Tom Hanks. So you just hop on consciousness. Here it is. It's like, oh, I'm riding this train. I don't know where it's going. I'm not driving it. You know, for me, it's an open-air car under beautiful azure skies, and I'm just riding this train, and it's not about me.
You have to believe something?
No. Yeah, because belief, in order to have belief, you know, something has to be true at the expense of something else. Something must be true at the expense of something else. We could just say that's a, you know, constructive notion of belief. And then one gets sucked back into the imagination of a corporeal and durable self, you know, made out of flesh as the consequence of somebody's copulation and, you know, going as far back as the Big Bang, right? The big copulation. And that's how misery endures. Belief, grasping, justification, becoming, self-consumption, wiggling free of the imagination of what ails us. There's no innocence. There's no absolute relaxation with the fact that experiencing is so. So if we can hop a train, just jump on the back of consciousness like you might a two-humped camel crossing the Sahara, then maybe we could discover some kind of nourishment, or who knows what anyone is after, but if you're after something, whatever it might be, perhaps it's just this. Perhaps it's the nature of being free from the slightest hint of grasping or incarceration. It's a quiet kind of orgasm. to be, what could we say, innocent enough, still enough, available enough, including affection and interest, to just sit and watch consciousness suggest. Consciousness, and I don't know what consciousness is. I'm not saying it is a thing or not. We can just watch the beauty of suggestibility arise in the midst of one's experience nonstop. That's what we have right here, is the mystery of suggestibility arising. And everything that we say about it after the fact, like body and mind and emotions and the quality of my life and how it needs to be better, is just, you know, it's sprayed or hand brushed on top of naked availability. And our resolution, let's say psychic and spiritual and emotive resolution, is simply resting in this awareness without vector. Yeah. We're just riding awareness.
So with the habit and conditioning we have, the ride has a certain flavor to it.
Yes, more, that's
with more
exactly
eye on the ice cream, right?
Yes, that's the nature of, let's just say, all of that, right? All of my sorrowful egotism is simply a weird kind of icing on the cake of pure being. It's you could say a field of interpretive habit, you know. Right.
If there was anything that I recognize and why I have this dialogue, it's noticing when the context grabs me and demands that I continue with it. And there's a possible response that says, I don't think so.
Yeah, that's nice. It's nice to just let yourself go, you know, and fall onto the sidewalk. Just, you know, it's like drop yourself like you might throw away, you know, a Dunkin' Donut wrapper in a trash can.
And even if I can't, and I'm really stuck in it, and that train has no stops. It's
just, yeah, of course.
It's rolling.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever that is, notice a quality that doesn't take it too much to heart like before. I don't know what I call that, just a little bit more of a...
Spaciousness. Psychic spaciousness.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah.
More room for psychos, is that right?
Absolutely, more room for psychos. Well, this is the, you know, in the literature, no matter where you go, you'll find references to basic space, the basic space. That would be that this is felt is the basic space. And all of the yogas suggest and encourage an approach, regardless of the degree of formality, to become aware of the texture of basic space and, who knows, ride on it, rest in it, take a nap. Simply enjoy the dynamism of the presence of awareness itself. And that has nothing to do directly, perhaps indirectly, but it has nothing to do directly with evoking or insisting upon or cultivating a remedy for the obtuse... the obtuse compulsion of self. You could say the view of this quality of intelligence is all that is. And our loyalty or preference or interest over time, let's say, shifts from self-consumption, which is a story-driven life, to the recognition of basic space. And no one can say how that turning around will impact your life, you know, your relationships, your commitments, the way you make a living, where you go, what you do, who you hang with, and the way that you hang with them. you can't say how you, how one might go into a natural kind of fasting. You know, dare I say a recognition of basic space as bliss, as nourishment. We can't say how that may impact you. I know how we want things to impact us, right? You know, I want, I don't know, more of something and less of something. Security and freedom from doubt and sorrow and freedom from suffering and invulnerability and ecstasy and all that stuff, you know. We can use those words and say, yeah, I'm really interested in that. But it turns out we don't really know how to approach, we don't know how to approach those sublimities. Maybe that's why we go to Machu Picchu and swim with dolphins and bend spoons and have our palms read or take correspondence courses that are supposed to deliver enlightenment, you know, in 5 short months.
Maybe somebody knows.
Yeah, maybe somebody knows. That's right. It could be as simple as facing the music in a way, saying, "Oh yeah, this is as good as it gets." And then becoming has a chance to relax completely. Frames of reference and self, being self-consumed and tangling with circumstances and events and everything that's unsettling for me voyeuristically can just perhaps come to an exquisite rest. But I don't want to make exquisite rest, you know, the goal, someplace that you need to be or could even benefit from. I mean,
you could if you want.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way that, you know, teachers that want to enroll you in correspondence courses will attempt to sell you on a condition that, you know, they may be in, that you want to be in, and then give it, you know, various names.
Then you're caught up again with the success being connected to that condition.
Yeah. Have you noticed? I mean, we do that in our own minds, even without the intervention, you know, of a teacher or an object of desire. You could say the rapidity and efficiency with which consciousness anthropomorphizes as a creature is so fast and so good and so efficient that, you know, you have to get up really early to see through the habit of universe creation in your own mind at present. Because you can't unwind identification with mind in the past with any success. And you certainly can't unwind identification with mind in your future with any success. So if it turns out that there is some strange sacred geometry to be deployed, well, that would be the disengagement with the manufacture of self right about now. Right about here. Ha 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 And it's not like that's done, or that it's, you know, done by me or done by you, right? It's stranger than something that could be done or accomplished. It's like, you know, jump on the camel and just ride across the desert. I mean, you know, this has got you. Just jump on the camel, get your feet off the ground, leave yourself alone. Lie back.
The corresponding thought that occasionally wanders through my is, don't react to anything. See if you can dare to be free from the mind's reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, vipassana practice and things of its ilk, they're very, very deliberate about cultivating a nature of insight, or, you know, equanimous poise that does not react, does not grasp, does not create, does not covet, does not become. Right? It's the miraculous observation of the liquidation of everything appearing in the entire moment, including one's consciousness.
That's quickly followed by noticing that, what the fuck the difference does it make? Really? So you can do that, but there is things that arise, and they're equally as interesting, and there has not reacted.
Yes, of course. Who knows how to qualify this? You or someone might enjoy the metaphor of non-reactivity in the midst of all that's arising, and have felt that, and oddly know how to return to that, let's just call it posture or availability.
Right.
Yeah.
So you play around with both of them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's say someone says, you'd be better off, or I'd be better off being present. Okay, I'll take your word for it. So what then? What does that imply? I mean, is daydreaming not present? Is being scintillatingly aware of the textures of the artifacts in front of your face, is that present? Right? Is singing Hare Krishna, is that present? I don't, you know, can we be more or better present than what present already is and is lost in daydream and, let's call it, you know, a deplorable egotism, self-deploring egotism? Does that suck compared to sitting on a cushion and chanting the Heart Sutra, which is fantastic?
I know. Where is there to go?
Yeah. Yes.
What is the spot of realization?
Yeah. Well, this is fun as your own consciousness reflects on its own, can we say, nakedity, right? Then, yeah, you start to relax from preferences and spiritual ideals and things you've been taught and what's better than something else. Yeah. There's nothing to refuse. There's nothing to compare. There's nothing to measure. And yet, consciousness will show up in your experience, you know, oftentimes as a real gnarly son of a bitch.
as many covers, cloaks.
Yeah. Yeah, you got a closet full of costumes.
Right.
Right?
Right. So as wonderful as the visit was with Adam,
right,
I sensed that he was asserting a position, a stance, in the face of the mystery of it all.
Well, yeah, that is, you know, for him, it's a cultured approach. For many people, it's a cultured approach that says, I'll look like I'm meditating and open up my palms and feel
I didn't
room.
I didn't want to say, get the fuck off it, will you please?
Yeah.
That was not.
And well, you know, for some of us that have had fun ripping all that kind of shit to shreds, you know, we have an on ramp to mischief.
Right.
Right.
You know, get off it. Really.
Yeah.
It's all crazy.
Yeah, and for people that, who knows, Adam, you know, may encounter that are persons who are suffering, right?
Mm-hmm.
Persons
you can do them some good.
Yeah, then it's useful to give them an idyllic kind of context and a nice spiritual tonality, like falling open.
Right.
So that this becomes about something, and then it makes, you know, Adam, whom I like very much and have no quarrel with, you know, the purveyor of, right, something or other, which then leads into, let's call it a more intimate relationship vis-a-vis a paid correspondence course.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he did stop the fixing when called to task.
Yeah.
And was perfectly willing to get to nothing.
Well, I think we helped him along, particularly Nan and Lisa, you know, that just brought the house down.
Right.
I mean, and I was looking at the folks that were not from our part of town.
Right.
You know, to see how this unsubstantiated hilarity was affecting them, you know, and it was wonderfully, what's the word when you can catch something? Infectious. It was wonderfully infectious, and, you know, they were all cracking up too.
Right.
Like, mission accomplished, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know who it was that asked a question about, dealing with the space of nothingness 24/7. But
yeah.
it looked like somebody moved off of the self into the void in that moment.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of the transmission, which is just, let's say, a cooperative and serendipitous discovery, will shift faces depending on the right, the quality of consciousness that's doing the investigating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good meeting. I hope he comes again.
I think he will come again, and, you know, we'll have a chance to interface with him.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe he would be willing to interface in a more casual manner, you know, without, I mean, I set up the microphone for him. I didn't know how many people would be in the room. But typically, I would, you know, let's all sit at the same level and not do this as an, you know, an audience and leader thing and hang out more casually and see what arises.
What are you going to do when Peter comes?
Well, Peter's going to do what Peter does, yeah.
Okay. So we'll have one guy in the and a room full.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's his platform for teaching the yoga of radiant presence. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, that's reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. I mean, you know, seeing various
structures,
teachers and styles and structures and personas create either an explicit or vague context for the benefit of hanging out together and exploring a topic like consciousness. It's
right.
It's a lot of fun.
Yep. I emailed my cousin. I have not received a response.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I mean, you know, he's a yoga dude.
Oh, really? You've been to it.
Well, I mean, I've seen his biography and stuff at the Maniunk Yoga Studio, so.
Right. It's online.
He's a skilled you know, Yoga Dude and those guys, it's hard to figure out where their loyalty lies, you know, when it comes to awakening. You don't know if they're, you know, Ramakrishna.
It's an income. If it's recognized that there, if there are levels of ascension, they're perfectly willing that people pay to be guided on the journey. That's what Ed looks like he's up to.
Yes, yeah. I like hanging out with equally troubled adults.
Yes, it's a great location. I'm so appreciative. I mean, what are you going to charge for? That's why I asked him, does he teach? He didn't answer that.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes, as we will with everything.
Uh-huh.
Going or not going.
Who knows what we should be doing, you know? Who the fuck can get that? Who figure that out?
Yeah, it's a great question. What is there present experiencing? What's the nature of present experiencing? What are my motives for exploring my experience, speaking about it, going to teachings, going to a teacher, taking a correspondence course? Yeah. And the context that we create that justifies why we're doing what we think we're doing turns out to be the brick and mortar for samsara.
Mm-hmm. Unavoidable.
Yeah, yeah. Any context arising at all, which of course is politically correct in the neurotic life of a typical, you know, Western industrial mm-hmm. human being, is the brick and mortar for samsara. And so the re-education process, which you see, you know, Byron Katie and Yuji mm-hmm. Krishnamurti, and, you know, everyone is kind of a celebrity or an entertainer
right.
in the re-education process. Scientology, re-education, Mormon Church, re-education, Traeger bodywork,
mm-hmm.
re-education. It's like we're all participating somehow in, well, the best glory fest that we can come up with.
Right.
You know, if I go to the corner speakeasy 5 or 6 days a week and hang out for several hours sipping a couple of beers and talking shit with other people that like to smoke in public, that's glory.
Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of forms.
Missiles fly.
It's so wondrous and infinitely varied, mysterious, and overwhelming. My gosh.
Yeah, there's a, you could say a lot of this, the orientation of these kinds of yogas and disciplines are ways of coping constructively, dealing constructively with just how overwhelming
mm-hmm.
all of this is. You know, you could say that the principal the principal confusion or the principal error of the life of a dedicated primate is the presumption that we know what this is. In And so we structure our lives within the permission sets given us by the 1/10 of the 1% through the industrial and military and education and media outlets that give us permission to be a certain way, to aspire for many kinds of success or celebrity. And that's what the social outlet, the cultural outlet says is the way to thrive here.
Yes.
And so we do our best to thrive that way. And then when we fail, either to lack of intelligence or nutrition or ambition or by virtue of being injured by, you know, our parents, in all the ways that, you know, young persons or children can be injured, then we just end up in a giant ball of sorrow and frustration, not being able to succeed at what the crappy talking heads on TV tell us we should succeed at, and feeling that there's no place for us, there's no value for us, we don't know how to align ourselves with the miracle of experiencing itself. That's how deep and systemic the confusion is. And then, of course, we turn to whatever it is that we turn to express ourselves, you know? I mean, it could be, you know, doing a shell game on the street, you know, taking money from tourists. Anything, but fuck, what the hell is going on? I mean, what are the Koch brothers in it for? What does Eckhart Tolle want from this?
What are they going to get out of it?
I don't know. You know, what does Obama want? Or what does Hillary want? You know? what do you want?
Right.
What is it? I mean, what is it about? Dividends, earnings per share, after tax, you know, EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, and depreciation? What the fuck? And the cash and the gold and the natural resources. Meanwhile, the air and the water, you know, is slowly
going to hell.
Slowly being poisoned or quickly being poisoned, and we're still grasping at straws at false symbology, thinking that if we could just amass enough cash as false symbology, then we'll be able to thrive or survive or figure this out. On account of, you know, creature comforts or further industrialization and further fascism and further eavesdropping. it's like, excuse me, a timeout. Where has human dignity gone? Where has human creativity and vitality and human orgasm as the revelation of God? Where has it gone? We've been given such a narrow field of permission to thrive in. You wonder why, you know, people are confused and upset and seeking intercourse with or solace from, you know, anyone and anything.
I'm going to try out an observation on you. Have you ever sailed on a sailboat?
Mm-hmm. I have.
So, do you have any idea how many years mankind spent using wind to move?
Oh.
A couple thousand.
Probably longer than we've been burning gasoline, huh?
Well, it all got screwed up when the steam engine was employed to move a boat.
Yeah.
The Monitor and the Merrimack.
Well, those were Civil War vessels.
Right. That was the start, and this is my assertion, for whatever it's worth. But that was the start of altering a direct relationship with the forces that are occurring on the planet. To move. When we sunk that hook in our cheek,
yeah,
that we could no longer had to be in harmony or in relationship to natural forces, we took off like a shot.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely.
And that's where what we're still doing.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. We're still under the same paradigmatic influence of powered locomotion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the ultimate expression of that is anti-gravity spaceships, of which there are supposed to be five different civilizations on the planet using it, flying.
Well, now, if we go too deeply into science fiction, not that I'm suggesting those things aren't true, it kind of, it's too diluting, if you will.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't even care if it is. They can't get out of occurring in the moment.
Yeah, that's right. I think a fun point to make is that no matter how articulate and advanced a civilization is with respect to technology or even faster than light travel, you know, FLT, everything and everyone appearing within space-time for as long as they do, you know, are under the same, who knows, you know, influences of consciousness itself.
Well, I would assert that it even prevails or operates within the supposed after-death experiences.
Well, yes, it's not too much of a stretch to appreciate the subtlety of present experience arising in the way that it does, though we can't know the way that it does except by first-hand revelation, and get a feel that this curious creativity is not bound by birth and death.
Right.
Yeah.
It's still operating the same, whatever it is, it's still operating there.
Well, you know, it's strange because having been born or anticipating a death, what may have been before the birth or what may linger after the death, whether this is a volume, right, or a multiverse, or a multiverse of multiverses, there's no reigning hierarchy or boundary field to say where something is or is not occurring.
Right. On whatever level.
Yeah, well, that's just it. Even levels are, you know, spontaneously evoked or imagined.
And disappearing.
Yes.
So, I mean, yes. That it sounds like insights, but they're no good. We're not solving anything.
That's fun too. I mean, isn't that another level of appreciation where, you know, studying Buddhism or whatever, one is tricked into valuing insights as vehicles for some place else. And it turns out that, you know, insights are not all that insightful.
No, they disappear as soon as you have them.
Yeah, right. That's why, you know, you could use the word insight to suggest powerful aha moments.
Right.
And you could use the word, you know, revelation to suggest something that is, you know, leaning more toward, you know, transcendence. It doesn't have a punchline.
Yeah.
Insights have a punchline, and revelation has no punchline.
Right.
For fun, you know, we're nobody knows.
Make
what's
it up.
True. Yeah, we're just making it up. Nobody knows what's true, and that's a good thing.
Well, I got a lot of that out of the sailboats. By hanging wash. I put up a clothesline and hung my sheets and my pillowcase. And they smell fresh.
Nice.
And they weren't mechanized. And just saw them flapping in the breeze. No machine. And my God, do they smell great.
That's it's a sign of a nice day.
Yeah. Amazing. Oh. Where are we getting to when we move faster?
I think my speed is like horse and buggy, because as this one person said, you didn't call me in 3 days. You're not my friend anymore.
Uh-huh.
But, oh, man, I don't want to be tethered or expected. I have to respond to a text, or I have to respond to an email, or I have to respond to a phone call. And if it isn't within a certain time, it means something not good. It's like, okay, good for you, but not good for me.
Yeah.
I don't like to be technology bound. It's something in my nature that just doesn't want to check email or even messages. If I'm in the middle of something, I might miss one or two.
Yeah. You know, clearly the amount of communication that we are on the receiving end of, voluntarily or otherwise, is a powerful tsunami of distraction. I'm not saying it's bad or that, you know, we would be wise to turn our cell phones in and put sails on top of our car roofs.
Right.
But it's just, it's interesting to track, well, look at the nature of consciousness and naivete and communication pressure from the era portrayed by Mad Men, you know, Park Avenue in the 50s, or Madison Avenue in the 50s, and the level of complexity and spin and fascistic loophole and public opinion manipulation that we're confronted with. You know, in the current era, everyone is admittedly or unconsciously overwhelmed by trivial stimulus from a thousand different sources that tug on our attention and suggest, you know, more story, more agreement or disagreement, or more suffering or more rejection or more aspiration, more, you know, kind of carnal and voyeuristic entertainment. I'm not saying it's bad. It's dense.
Well, it's dense enough to look like that's life.
Yeah, sure. I mean, everyone frames what's appearing in their lives the way they frame what's appearing in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, that's why it's it's kind of a shamanic endeavor to take time out. You know, and chill out and relax and consider things and have a good chuckle and
get off the wheel.
Yeah, really. It's like make space in one's life by some virtue of appointment to get off the wheel.
There seems to be some sort of reward system in play here. We do well.
Oh.
We do certain things. We eat certain things that we like and we want to do that again, or we go to a concert, or we read something interesting. But then there's that other inside, the discontent, that, you know, the longing or the frustration or the, you know, or worse. So it's an interesting dance. I just wonder what has us repeat certain things.
Sure. Well, I mean, can you feel just how organic your interest or one's interest in novelty is? I mean, I can't say why that's present or how poignantly rich it is, right? As a motivator.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, affection, interest, attention, novelty, a little danger, you know, not knowing, right? Something mysterious. Having a, you know, a kind of a liaison with consciousness that's a little different than how you were feeling about things a day ago. Yeah, so it's whatever's going on is a force of nature. And what we call a force of nature has its way with us, right, on all systems.
But then there's these moments where there's an override, and that seeming force of nature that seems to be driving all of a sudden is trumped by, as you used the word orgasm earlier, just some experience that's so full it can't be denied. And then we're enamored by this trump of trumps, you know, and go,
yeah,
shit, I thought
definitely.
I had been going. And now I'm discontent with what I was once happy with. I want that experience back.
Well, sure. That's also part of the, can we just say, the natural maturation and subtlety and sublimity of consciousness itself appearing in our maturing experience, right? I might like to be, but I'm not playing with Tonka toys in my sandbox anymore.
That's good.
So experientially, since that's the primary interface with what we call living as experience, experientially, we seek more subtlety or novelty or mystery. Our capacity for joy and immersion changes over time. So a kind of renunciation of earlier insistences occurs. And if we're lucky, we might discover some nourishment can be had in the, you know, the glorious madness of a present moment that's always evaporating. It seems to be the trajectory, not maybe one of many, for what we refer to as human consciousness, toward refinement, sensitivity, a re-education, non-violence, presence. And that this kind of orientation can actually nourish us and fascinate us and hold our attention is truly a grace.
Where does injustice come from?
Yeah. Well, it kind of depends on how seriously, you know, one wants to invest in injustice, right? Whether the injustice is stepping on an ant or, you know, burning an entire anthill in the back of your property.
I was thinking of that fella running away from a cop and hearing pop, 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 and then...
Well, you know, you give someone a pair of legs and someone else a gun and anything can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk socially or socio-politically about the entire consciousness of recruiting unstable personas to be, you know, police persons. I mean, the consciousness that we're following is the recruitment and the arming, the training, the culture of justification, the racism, right? The violence. I mean, it's all part of a, you could say the challenge of contemporary consciousness or the challenge of consciousness for humans, right, since the get-go. I mean, it turns out the only one that we have a slim chance of refining is ourselves. I mean, obviously the politicians and the social engineers and the news media and everyone else is not doing that great a job about discouraging theft at airports by baggage handlers or overzealous keepers of the peace who turn out to be trigger-happy homicidal maniacs. It's not a good sign what we're seeing in terms of the stresses of more and more aggressive police brutality without consequence. But that's just a microcosm of environmental brutality without consequence, or Wall Street brutality without consequence, or an entire culture and social structure, as in the United States, which thrives on the war industry. That's a kind of injustice, too.
Would that suggest, then, that consequence is a consciousness feedback, has a value in consciousness, in awareness?
Well, sure, why not? I mean, who would argue with that in terms of, you know, the loop of consciousness, behavior, outcome, and circumstance, and how human beings... you know, link arms to try from time to time to do better. Right? It's a way to look at it, but you could also say it's all crazily, miraculously, serendipitously showing up just the way that it does, and you can't really draw any lasting socio-political conclusions from anything at all. Life is flowering is a way to look at it. Life is flowering. Some of it is, perhaps most of it is fantastic, and there's still a bunch of it that seems to suck, as, for instance, injustice and all the ways that that shows up.
You know, I'll take the whole thing.
Yeah, right, right.
I don't want an idealized, utopic world like maybe what I once did as a child.
I think yes.
This one's far more dynamic and keeps me on my toes than some fantasy realm of wouldn't it be nice kind of thing.
Well, that's true. Wouldn't it be nice as much money as the Beach Boys made from the phrase? is, you know, we discover is childish.
I like the challenge of my, or this awareness being like smacked in the face with something and not knowing what to do with it and being okay with, or discovering, you know, what comes out, what comes up.
Yeah, yeah, I love it, sure, because it's the discovery and the reciprocity and the constructive or, you know, clumsy response to the beauty of whatever's showing up. Hey, we love being conscious.
I think it was no accident that after World War II, a lot of people that came back got into hunting. My father was one of them. I'm thinking, here you are, all geared up for some sort of an encounter, and you come back and get geared up with the wild animals.
Huh? Yeah, I guess once you've put a weapon to your shoulder and used it, it's fun. You probably want to stay with that.
Even though he was not active in that way, he was repairing airplanes, but I think they all have to be able to pick up one and make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so different.
Yeah. I mean, have we made, it's an interesting neck and neck, let's say, with technology. Have we made more strides with respect to healing, education, dignity, spiritual affirmation, or have we made more strides with respect to the technology for genocide and war?
Well, not to get into it too deeply, but I'm intrigued by the reward system, and if suppose we had an idea of peace. If that were more profitable, I think we'd have a hell of a lot more of it. On the other hand, you know, it seems like war is profitable usually to certain people, and that reinforces itself. Not that it's wrong or bad, but I certainly don't like to see unnecessary suffering. But
yeah, it's interesting, you know, how humans congregated as social groups, right? Genders and nations and religions, the boundaries of all kind, political and social affiliations. It's interesting to see how we have created what it is that appears that we've created, the value systems associated with air and water and land and fertilizer and manufactured wheat and GMOs and the dying of the bees and, right, industrial equipment and financial systems and the successful international slave, human sex trafficking slave trade. You'd think, can't we do better than this? But who knows? We may be at the top of our game. We may be at the pinnacle of, you know, the high end of human consciousness.
Well, we're certainly more electronically connected than we ever have in our lifetime. That someone in a remote village of Africa, they have a laptop or a cell phone, or even just a cell phone, they could be in this conversation.
Oh, there's no question, yeah.
You know, or anything else, as far as awareness, where, you know, you hear a made-up thing, and then you have the actual encounter with another human being, and you go, I think I'll stick with the real, as opposed to...
Yeah. I mean,
like spin, you know. It's spin.
Mm-hmm. The profusion of technology and connectedness and telepathy and voyeurism is occurring, right? I mean, so absurdly fast. Everything is changing so profoundly with respect to the way that, I don't know, progressive Western industrialized humans are living. You know, it's not possible for the sociologists and the anthropologists and the psychologists to catch up. Maybe that's why so much antidepressant medication is prescribed.
I don't know. I'd honestly rather feel depressed than to take something and not feel something. I mean, I'm kind of weird that way.
Oh, I hear you. And, you know, if you have the constitution of enduring some, you know, difficult emotional or psychological states and then seeing the sun when the sun finally shows up, that's swell. Right. Some people are confused and depressed and disenfranchised socially and spiritually within the family and within the community and within the educational system, that without the antidepressants, you know, things could be really, really fucking dreary.
And I could write a dark novel or something.
Some have.
Right? If I have dark stories, and, you know, turn it into something.
Yeah, make lemonade. I mean, that's what we got here. I mean, the expectations that you and I have of getting through a day, you know, in and around the lovely borough of Doylestown, are probably, I don't know how different or how similar they are to living in the slums of, you know, Calcutta or most of Africa or huge pockets of South America, India, Afghanistan. Go where you will.
Ironically, in some sense, it might be very similar.
And it could be. Yeah.
You know, is it like night and day?
Yeah.
Similar in human warmth. You know, someone that you're close to, where you find strength environmentally, it might be very different.
Yes. It's fun, you know, when we bounce around, let's say, from topic to topic, theory to theory, rumination to rumination. You get a sense just how uncannily vast and strange human life is. Including the profound rhythms, you know, of a day. Just the rhythms of a day, you know, that the earth is always turning. And during its spinning on its axis, it's also revolving, right, around the sun in a 365 roughly day adventure. Carved into units and seasons and, you know, the nonstop appetite of all organic and sentient creatures to take nourishment, right, in water and soil and plant and flesh, and the movement of all the excrement that occurs and the waste products which go back into hopefully fertilizing, you know, the next crop of wild berries. And then there's the political frenzy and the media frenzy, the industrial frenzy and the waste and the politics and the posturing and the violence of it all, the intrusion. And yet there's ecstatic beauty in every gesture of every material expression of the species, of the culture. Absolute ecstasy at hand in each evaporating novel moment of consciousness itself. Where do we go for nourishment and nurture? How do we frame having a magical relationship with the magic of being itself? Who are our friends and enemies? What do we regret? What do we aspire to? What have we convinced ourselves of that may or may not be true?
I rarely read your stuff, but I did read that thing about your Panera Bread experience. That was kind of fun. I can relate in one sense that, I don't know anything. I feel great.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. This is going wrong, and that isn't right, and this should be that way. And it's like all from that self-presumptive knowledge.
Yeah, that's right. It's like a Gatling gun of what's not right about me in my present experience. We're dodging our own bullets.
Yep.
If there's an insight or a revelation or a catharsis to be had, if there's a response that we would like to participate in to the miracle of being itself, well then, that would be curiously just this, just now. This is both the revelation and the engagement and the participation and the actualization and fruition. Just this. And the moment the slightest vector arises, you know, as a person, as a body, as a collection of disappointments and regrets, then, you know, we leap instantaneously back into a multifaceted fantasy, which leaves us fatigued and irritable and competitive. I don't think you can succeed at what the Buddhists might suggest, as in you know, cultivating the paramis or refinements of behavior and mindfulness without also just being immersed in and exposed to everything that may feel and present as an injustice.
No, I was just going to say, I prefer to hang around people that are, even if they're being fooled, improving themselves by behaving kindly and their behavior being, you know, kind and pleasant and, you know, appreciative. But the very next thought was, I kind of like those saucy characters that are unpredictable and a little wild and untenable.
Sure.
It's like, cancel the first one. I'll take the whole thing. Thank you.
Right. Yeah.
And not to mention, I can't possibly be just one or the other. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah, thank goodness for that. I mean, you know, you don't show up being on the side of sobriety or insanity with any stability or predictability. You know, thankfully you're you're as wonderfully impulsive as the next person. Well, we've crossed the 9 o'clock mark. Thanks everyone for participating, directly or indirectly.
Thank you, Jeff.
And we'll do it again sometime.
No problem.
Yeah, great.
Take care.
Take care.